Everybody online, looking good.
We have clearance, Clarence.
Roger, Roger. What's our vector, Victor?
Hello?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to my underground lair.
I would like, if I may, to take you on a strange journey.
Okay, good evening, America, and welcome aboard.
Hey, good looking.
Hello, baby. Hey, homie.
Hey, buddy.
What's up, dude?
Just chilling, homie.
Cool, buddy.
Yeah, dude.
Buddy.
Homie.
Dude.
Shall we play a game?
Inside this room, all of my dreams become realities, and some of my realities become dreams.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside.
Hey, bud, let's party.
Come out, wherever you are.
Hey!
Hi-ho, neighbor.
So, how are you doing?
I come in peace.
Well, well, here we are. Welcome.
Welcome to my world. Won't you come on in?
And now we're pleased to bring you our feature presentation.
Well, 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 well. Hello there. I'm Jenna, your hostess, and I am happy you joined me today for this, the 39th regular episode of Three Things. I can scarce believe it is November already. Can I just say that even though it is just past Halloween and not even close to Thanksgiving yet, I am already sick to death of Christmas songs? Seriously, they are playing them on the radio already. I might get an aneurysm. Maybe I can head off said intracranial injury by exercising a few brain cells and telling you a few interesting things. You think that'll work? Let's try it and see. And thing one today, it's spanking time. Today, my guillotine is in the shop getting a new chopper, and so I thought it would fill in the missing off with their head segment with some good sound spankings instead. Listen to these stories about these nuts, and you can decide if you want to join me in the ensuing spankage. A Brooklyn high school student caused a stir when he showed up for class dressed as Adolf Hitler for Halloween. Walter Petrick, 16, defended his costume, insisting it was a satire of the Nazi dictator, but some students and officials at Leon M. Goldstein High School were not impressed. School administrators ordered the junior honor student to remove his beige coat bearing a red swastika armband or possibly face spending the day in the office. Petrick refused, saying his parody was protected by his right to freedom of expression. Petrick's stepfather, Howard Bloom, who is Jewish and lost relatives during the Nazi genocide, said he was initially very disturbed by the costume, but nonetheless defended his stepson's rights. If he had wanted to advocate my genocide, I wouldn't have allowed the costume, he said. That wasn't the spirit in which he was doing this at all. He was doing it in the spirit of Monty Python and Mel Brooks. The city's Department of Education discipline code allows for the removal of students from class if they wear clothing that causes a disruption. In order to avoid a disruption on his way to school, Petrick had disguised his Hitler getup as a costume of Charlie Chaplin by adding a bowler hat and cane. That seems to me like he knew it was a disruptive getup, and he should get a whooping for that one. Naughty, naughty boy. The principal of Park High School returned to school Tuesday after a 6-day suspension for giving a student a wedgie. The Livingston School District Board held a special meeting Monday and approved Superintendent Hannibal Anderson's recommendation that Principal Eric Messerly be allowed to return to work. it has been clearly recognized and stated that the behavior is inappropriate, unprofessional, and unacceptable, Anderson said. Messerly's behavior warrants substantial disciplinary action, but was not sufficient grounds for a recommendation for termination, he said. Messerly was suspended for 2 days without pay and 4 days with pay for grabbing a Park High senior's soccer jersey and pulling it over his head and giving the student a wedgie by pulling up on the waistband of his underwear. The incident happened on October 5th at a junior varsity soccer game. Messerly cried Monday as he read a statement to the board and the public. I've made mistakes in my life, but none have had the impact that this one has had, he said. He said his first reaction was to resign, but he wanted to tackle this mess head on. I want to live in a world where we don't have to hide when we screw up, he said. Public comments about Messerly, voiced by students, parents, and community members, ranged from reprimand to encouragement. What could be better than showing how you bounce back after a mistake? Community member Brad Snow said. The days of a school staff person laying hands on a student are long gone, said a woman in the audience. Park High Vice Principal Bob Stevenson and girls soccer coach Nate Anderson, who both witnessed the October 5th incident, expressed support for Messerly. They said his actions were a mistake, but they were done in an effort to joke around with the student. It was meant in playfulness, Anderson said. Others, including trustee Greg Brainerd, said Messerly's trying to be on an equal level with the students was the problem. He attributed the incident to loss of traditional authority structure, which he believes should be reestablished in the school system. Anderson said Messerly also received a letter of reprimand. And if it were up to me, and on this show it is up to me, almost everyone involved would get a spanking. And then there is the Little Rock, Arkansas man whose SUV was cut off in traffic after he allegedly shot at a motorist with a crossbow following a brief chase. It was a drive-by crossbow shooting, said Steve Gillenbach, a pitcher for the University of Arkansas Little Rock baseball team, who said he was the man's intended target. I've never been shot at by a crossbow before. Wayne Allen Dirks Jr., 26, posted bail after his arrest Sunday on charges of committing a terrorist act, possession of an instrument of crime, driving while intoxicated, and driving on a suspended driver's license. Committing a terrorist act is a felony. The other charges are misdemeanors. He was arraigned on October 25th. Gillenbach acknowledged cutting in front of Dirks on Interstate 630 in Midtown Little Rock. I was merging on the highway and I had to get in, so I cut the guy off, Gillenbach said. He started following me, cursing at me, and yelling for me to pull over. A police report said Gillenbach admitted to police he had made an obscene gesture toward Dirks, but he said Monday he didn't remember doing so. Archery crossbow hunting seasons for deer, bear, and turkey began October 1st, so it's not extraordinary that someone might be carrying a crossbow in their vehicle at this time of year. The pursuit continued for several miles over the interstate and a city street. As the cars approach the intersection, all of a sudden he comes up next to me and shoots a crossbow at my car, Gillenbach said. It ricocheted off the back window, which shattered. Gillenbach called 911 and followed Dirks until the police arrived. I circled around and got behind him, but he pulled into a parking lot and aimed the crossbow at me again, Gillenbach said. After Dirks' arrest, officers found a crossbow with a scope, 4 crossbow bolts, and a cooler containing 11 unopened beers and 1 opened can. Dirks registered a .12 on a blood alcohol test. The legal threshold is .08. Gillenbach said it will cost $400 to replace his rear window. Dirks' spanking today is free. Well then, there you have the candidates for spankage today. I'm sure you all agree with me that these folks need that. So here we go. Let's get on with the spanking. Walter Petrick, with your really quite unfunny masquerade. Principal Eric Messerly, with your wholly inappropriate and not acceptable at all wedgie giving. And you, Wayne Alec Dirks, with your near lethal combo of booze and bows. Step up, pull 'em down, bend over and get your spankings here. Yeah, that's right. That's what you get. That's what you get for being dummies. You're bad, bad boys. Dumb, bad boys. Yo, quit complaining. Look at you complaining. Take your spanking. That's right. Now, all of you, go to the naughty seat and think about what you've done. I'm finished with you until supper, you brats. I'm also finished with this thing number one, for today. I hope you know it hurt me more than it hurt you.
About a man named Ed, a television comic who wanted lots of bread in New York City, and made the people howl, but to make big bucks he had to go to Southern Cal. If only that is studios, movie star.
America's hottest film has come to television. It's Beverly Hillbillies Cop.
Ellie, man, get those stinking goats out of my kitchen. Y'all the stupidest white people I've ever seen.
Mr. Clampett, I can't seem to get my car started.
That's because I stuck a banana up your tailpipe, you old horse-faced broad, you.
Well, now it's time to say goodbye to Eddie and his friends. Lives up in a mansion, owns two Mercedes-Benz. He's got $5 million, but no Oscars on his shelf. Because even though he's funny, he always plays himself.
Hey, what?
Limited, that is.
What are you talking about,
one superstar? Character.
I'm a superstar.
Don't talk back now, you hear?
This day in history, November the 3rd, has been a quiet yet kinda interesting one. There have been a few true luminaries and lots of actors and sports stars that I won't list here, born on this day, like in the year 39, in which Spain saw the birth of poet Lucan Cordova. He wrote the Bellum Seville. 1718 saw the arrival on the planet of John Montagu, the 4th Earl of Sandwich. He, of course, is credited with the invention of the sandwich. 1793, Stephen Fuller Austin was born. He colonized my beloved Texas. In 1794, William Cullen Bryant, the poet that wrote Thanatopsis, was born. 1922, Charles Bronson was born in Pennsylvania. I know, he's an actor, and I said I wasn't going to bother listing them, but I really like him, and it's my show, so there. 1930, William H. Dana, the pilot who piloted the X-15, was born. And in 1954, Adam Ant, aka Stuart Goddard, the punk rocker, came screaming into the world. As for deaths which occurred on November 3rd, in 1864, Antonio Gonçalves Dias, the Brazilian national poet, died at sea. 1926 saw the death of Rootin' Tootin' Annie Oakley. She was a heck of a shot, that gal. In 1990, Mary Martin, the actress that played Peter Pan, died at the tender age of 76. I wonder if she was surprised. On this day, historically speaking, 1394 saw the Jews expelled from France by Charles VI. In 1679, a great panic occurred in Europe over the close approach of a comet. In 1783, George Washington ordered the Continental Army disbanded. 1868 saw the first black man, John W. Menard of Louisiana, elected to the United States Congress. 1888, Jack the Ripper killed his last victim. In 1918, Poland proclaimed independence from Russia after World War I. 1931 saw the first commercially produced synthetic rubber manufactured. In 1952, Clarence Birdseye first marketed frozen peas. 1953 saw the first live color coast-to-coast telecast. In 1954, Linus Pauling won the Nobel Prize for Chemistry. In 1956, The Wizard of Oz was first televised. 1957 saw the USSR launching Sputnik 2 with a dog named Laika aboard. She was the first animal in orbit. 1973, Mariner 10 launched. The first Venus pics were taken then, and it was also the first mission to Mercury. In 1988, the Soviet Union agreed to allow the teaching of Hebrew in schools. 1988 also saw talk show host Geraldo Rivera's nose being broken as Roy Innes brawled with skinheads during a television taping. And in 1992, on November 3rd, Bill Clinton was elected U.S. President. Holidays on this day include, in Ecuador, Cuenca's Independence Day. In Japan, it's Culture Day. In Panama, it's Independence Day. In Texas, it's Father of Texas Day. For the world, it's World Community Day. Reach out and shake a hand, why don't ya? And in Dominica, it's National Day. It's not as busy as some TDIHs have been, eh? At least, not when I leave out all the thespians and jocks. But that's alright, I just couldn't decide who to leave in and who to leave out, so I was like Solomon and let that other lady have the baby. Nice, yeah? That's it for this day in history for today, November 3rd. If it was your birthday, then happy birthday. If not, happy day anyway. Join me, Jenna, next Friday, November the 10th, to see what happened then.
You've bought his records, you've seen his films, you've even purchased the Dayglo Velvet Memorial paintings at the gas station. As a true Elvis fan, you think you've heard it all, but wait, there's more. Now you can buy secret recordings of Elvis's last telephone conversations. Yes, it's the Elvis tapes.
Hello, baby. This is Elvis. And I want you to come over right now and make me a big peanut butter and then a sandwich. A peanut butter and then a sandwich will get me through the night.
You'll hear Elvis in his most intimate moments.
Hello, Pizza Man, Pizza. Yeah, this is the Elvis. Why don't you bring me over a couple large pies? Don't make it three. Don't make it six, double cheese. Yeah, I'm home, I'm alone, and I'm hungry.
And you'll hear Elvis reveal how he really feels about the one true love of his life.
I want you back in my life, baby. And on your way back, would you pick up some donuts, please? Big jelly, cream donuts, crullers, cheese, Danish, too. I love my big honey glazed donuts. Without them, I can't do.
The Elvis tapes.
Oh, give me more donuts.
Available now in drugstores everywhere.
I love to eat. Let me more.
A picture is said to be worth a thousand words, and that has certainly been true of the Hubble Space Telescope, which recently won a reprieve from imminent technical failure. Michael Griffin, NASA's administrator, announced that a space shuttle will be sent to repair and refurbish the Hubble in 2008, a much-needed servicing mission that should keep the ailing optical telescope working until at least 2013. Of the many images of planets, stars, and galaxies gathered by Hubble over the years, the one early picture that came to exemplify its power was the one published in January 1996, 6 years after the machine was launched. One scientist said at the time that it was the astronomical equivalent of finding the Dead Sea Scrolls. It was called the Hubble Deep Field, an image gathered over 10 days with the help of 342 separate camera exposures concentrated on the same tiny patch of sky. With the naked eye, the patch was about the size of a penny held 75 feet away, and it was so devoid of any starlight that it was thought to provide a peephole to peer through our own galaxy and any intervening galaxies to see the very edge of the universe. It was a narrow, deep core, analogous to the geological cores drilled into the Earth's crust, through which astronomers had hoped to see into the farthest reaches of space. The advantage of the Hubble is that it has the power to detect objects that are far too faint to be seen with even the most powerful ground telescopes. Yet no one was quite prepared for what the Hubble Deep Field showed. When the digital images first emerged on scientists' screens at Space Telescope Science Institute in Baltimore, Maryland, they showed a bewildering assortment of galaxies, hundreds of them. Subsequent digital refinements showed that this tiny patch of sky, devoid of any light when viewed through most ground-based telescopes, held at least 3,000 galaxies, each of them composed of hundreds of millions of stars. The variety of galaxies we see is amazing. In time, these Hubble data could turn out to be the double helix of galaxy formation, the Institute's director, Robert Williams, said at the time of the announcement in 1996. We are clearly seeing some of the galaxies as they were more than 10 billion years ago in the process of formation. The deep field image came to represent what was at the very heart of the Hubble mission. Hubble was not just a sophisticated optical telescope perched in space, it was a time machine that allowed us to look back to the beginning of the universe. It takes light only 1 second to travel 186,000 miles, yet the light from the galaxies in the deep field had taken more than 10 billion years to reach Hubble. Hubble let us dream about seeing the moments following the Big Bang when the first stars and galaxies condensed from newly created matter. The telescope was named after the American astronomer Edwin Hubble, who in 1929 discovered that the galaxies of the universe were moving rapidly away from us. It meant the universe was expanding, as Albert Einstein had predicted with his general theory of relativity. Unfortunately, at the time, Einstein did not believe his own prediction, and so had altered his equations to suit. Later, when he heard of Hubble's observation, he described those alterations as the biggest blunder of his life. After delays, the Hubble telescope was finally launched in 1990, but a hugely embarrassing problem immediately emerged. Its main mirror, honed to within a millionth of an inch, was the wrong shape. So Hubble had myopic vision, completely corrected in 1993, when a shuttle delivered a high-tech contact lens. Now Hubble came into its own and provided NASA with possibly its best PR coup since the moon landings. Images of galaxies, nebula, and stars were stunning, a testament to Hubble's prime position in space. Ground-based telescopes have an inherent problem: atmospheric interference, which is why scientists have put bigger and bigger telescopes on higher and higher mountains. Indeed, a frequent quip of astronomers is that peering at the stars through Earth's hazy atmosphere is a bit like bird watching from the bottom of a lake. Air turbulence and other interference from the gases and the water vapor of the atmosphere gives stars their endearing twinkle, but makes stars fuzzy when viewed through a telescope. Hubble was a way of overcoming this problem. By putting the telescope in a high orbit far above the Earth's atmosphere, the light from distant stars and galaxies could be captured in all its virgin glory. It meant that the Hubble could now see objects that were about 30 times fainter than the farthest objects seen from Earth. In 1995, NASA released one of Hubble's most iconic images, the act of starbirth, in the Eagle Nebula. Through swirling clouds and cosmic dust, young stars emerged like freshly forged diamonds in a night sky. Within our solar system, Hubble shed valuable insights into our own planetary neighborhood. It checked out the dust storms on Mars in preparation for the safe landing of NASA's Pathfinder mission with its roving vehicles. It took images of the intense fireballs that erupted on Jupiter when, in 1994, giant fragments of the comet Shoemaker-Levy 9 slammed into it with the energy of many thousands of hydrogen bombs. And only Hubble had the power to see the details of Pluto, the then most distant planet, as it marked its lonely orbit around the edges of the solar system. Last year, Hubble discovered that Pluto may not have one, but possibly even two or three moons, which I suppose now will just be satellites of another satellite, since Pluto is no longer a planet. But one of the greatest scientific successes of Hubble was helping to solve one of the most difficult problems in cosmology, determining the rate at which the universe is expanding. Edwin Hubble confirmed that galaxies were moving away from us, but he and subsequent generations of astronomers could not agree on how fast they were flying apart. This is important because if we could work out the rate of the universe's expansion, it would be possible to extrapolate back to when the Big Bang occurred. In other words, we could then work out the true age of the universe. Prior to Hubble's launch, estimates of the age of the universe varied from between 10 billion to 30 billion years, with many scientists believing it would turn out to be 15 billion years. Hubble set out about helping to solve the problem by accurately measuring the distance to bright young stars called Cepheids, which can be used as milepost markers to calculate the distances to nearby galaxies. Once these distances were known, it was easier to make better calculations as to the speed with which they are moving away, and hence the expansion rate of the universe. Astronomers and cosmologists now estimate that the most likely age of the universe is 13.8 billion years, plus or minus the odd million years. We can thank the Hubble for that too. To view some of the amazing, and I mean amazing, photos taken with the Hubble telescope, check the link on the blurb for this episode, episode 39, on the homepage of the show, threethings.podomatic.com. That's thing number two, and I'm finished with it. I'm gonna go look up. And now it's time for the gracious, the gravitational, the gravid, G-W-O-D, grandiloquent word of the day. How excited am I? Very, that's how. Our grandiloquent word of the day today begins with the 39th letter for the 39th episode of Three Things, the merry, the magnificent, the amusing letter M. And that word is malassociation. It is spelled M-A-L-A-C-I-S-S-A-T-I-O-N. It is a noun. It is pronounced malassociation. The etymology is a bit cloddy, as it seems either from the Latin malassisar or the Greek malakizin. Take your pick. I'm happy either way. It is defined as the process of making something soft and pliable. Used in a sentence for you all. Then the teacher yelled, "Young lady, if you were intent upon practicing malassociation of those hard bits of flavored chicle, you should have brought enough for everyone." See, it's like I was a teacher there for a minute. Or maybe not so much. This one time in junior high school, I took enough for everyone, and my teacher, Mrs. Robbins, sent me to the office. I was all like, "What, Ev?" Anyway, there you have it. Our word for today, malassociation. It's a good, sturdy word. Use it sometime to prop up a soft sentence or brace a bad paragraph. I'm sure it will serve you well, as will the legion of other fine words one can find when one visits the Grandiloquent Dictionary online, the link to which is always to be found on the homepage of this show at 3things.podomatic.com.
Shania Twain here. Hi, Gino. Now listen, this is one girl you don't want to mess with.
Looks like Courtney got himself a new toy. She's a Toro self-propelling six-horse rear bagger with a 22-inch deck.
Gordo, she's what a fella wants.
Any gal of mine shouldn't be complaining if I got a great big beer gut hanging. I can walk around like a big dumb ape, but you better be in shape. And if I date's at 7 and I show up at 8, don't you say one word, cause you know if I'd have been there on time, you'd have never been ready anyway. Any girl of mine, well, she better not mind. If I have my big smelly beer belly buddies over all of the time, I need a gal who knows how the lawn gets mowed. She's gotta be the good looking great cooking, never ever bugging me kind. Any gal of mine. Should I wear the camouflage cap or the John Deere cap?
Well, I don't know. They're both so damn sexy.
I know it. Any gal of mine better plainly see that Brad Pitt can't hold a candle to me. If my hair's getting thinner than it used to be, you better say it looks good on me. And if I date's at 7 and I get there at 8, don't you say one word, cause you know if I'd have been there on time, you'd have never been ready anyway.
Pull my finger.
Any gal of mine better tell me I'm fine. Better be the Vikings, Twins, or Timberwolves watching kind. I need a gal who knows how the lawn gets mowed. She's gotta be my jaw flapping, knee slapping, heart thumping, fun loving kind. Say, hon, grab me a cold one. How about a big kiss? Cook, clean, wash the blue jeans, shake a leg, tap another keg. You missed a spot on the toilet, dear. Need you remember to pick up my beer? Hey, is my lunch all packed? Man, them Baywatch girls can act.
Now, this is what a fella wants.
Ah, that's for sure, man.
A gal of mine.
That's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
You try any of those over there?
That smells good eating.
Right. Oh, you betcha.
Yeah. I was saying I caught a 45-pound muskie. She jumped right out the boat.
Oh, get on there.
Oh, no, again. I'm serious.
You still got that Merc 70 in there?
But I think she's scaring away the fish.
Isn't that something?
And thing number 3 today, it's all a matter of manners. I've pondered a great deal since that last thing I did on manners, and I have a bit to add on the subject of picky eaters and why they bother me. I was thinking about how some people are so very picky about eating, and it made me curious as to how many other people are bothered by picky eaters, or if it was just me. Well, I took a bit of a poll on the subject, and it isn't just me, thank goodness for that. Apparently, lots of people are bothered by picky people. When I ponder my reasoning for this peeve and listen to others talk about it, I realize it isn't really what people eat or don't eat that is so annoying. I don't care what folks eat. That's their choice, isn't it? It's your body. Stick what you want in it. That's just fine with me. Eat nothing but vegetables or nothing but meat, or eat kosher or don't eat pork. Eat according to your religion. Follow a strict diet. Avoid allergens. Whatever. So then, if not all these reasons for the peeve, why am I bothered by picky eaters? I came to the conclusion that it isn't what people do or don't eat that bothers me, nor is it that they don't like what I like. It isn't even that some folks have seemingly nutty reasons for their culinary no-nos that bothers me. No, it isn't what people eat or don't eat that gets to me at all. It is, however, how they go about expressing their dietary preferences. It all boils down to this. I don't hate picky eaters for being picky eaters. Some of them are quite nice about it. I just hate rude people. It's a lack of manners, you guys. And if you are a regular listener, you know I detest, loathe, and wish to eliminate bad manners. The way I see it, there are nice ways to say what you want or need, and there are bratty, rude, and churlish ways to do so. If you can be nice as a guest, you are probably welcome at any table, and people will go out of their way to serve you according to your needs and likes. If you are rude and obnoxious, it will probably be just the opposite. Your supper invitations might not come in as fast and heavy as you might think they would, what with your delightful charm and all. Not only that, but your buddies might not want to go out in public with you. I wouldn't. I really don't like people that treat waitstaff and bartenders and even bussers as if they have a plot against them or are stupid or worse, are robots that are only there to take your verbal abuse and cater to your every selfish and stupid whim. I have seen how horrible people can be to waitstaff and hosts, and it isn't pretty. It isn't pretty at all. So I thought about it and decided that I should give a little primer on manners relating to being a good supper guest in order to help those picky people to get along a little better with the rest of us. It isn't that I think that y'all listeners are in any way unmannerly, because you are all obviously so smart and kind and great because you listen to Three Things, but so you can be armed when and if this subject becomes an issue to you. You can just show people this episode and let them take what they will from it. A little gentle guidance never hurt anyone, right? While I am not really some huge authority on the subject of manners, I do have them and have been complimented on them often enough, so I feel pretty safe in giving a few suggestions to help dinner guests, hosts, waitstaffs, and customers, and family members and friends to get along at the table just a little better. First, within reason, eat what you are offered and do so nicely, even if it looks like mush and tastes like butt. This is something taught me from early childhood. If you are offered food in someone else's home, it is rude to turn it down. And don't bother to explain why either, it doesn't matter. You should just try to avoid saying no to your host. Even if it is something you don't normally like or eat, just take as small a portion as possible and eat it and smile. It won't kill ya. And after you have eaten it, you praise the cook and thank them kindly. When someone cooks for you, it should be considered an expression of friendship, and such an expression should never be taken with anything but acceptance and grace. Bringing people together at the table is meant to make and cement bonds of friendship and community. One could at least be nice about it, right? In my family, we were always told that when you serve food to a guest, it should always be the best you have. And that meant that when you went to someone else's house, it should be considered the same way. No matter what it is, it should never be frowned upon or refused. It should be taken politely and your host thanked graciously. To be a good guest, one should be mannerly, thankful, and humble about it. Second, if you really have problems with allergens or steadfast religious guidelines or the like about your food, try talking with your would-be host at the time the invitation is extended. Tell them politely what your needs are, and most people will be good enough to make every effort to meet those needs. Do it ahead of time and save everyone involved embarrassment and/or hurt feelings. Third, when you do graciously accept a dinner invitation and when you politely accept the offerings of your host, please refrain from making faces, noises, or derisive comments about the food you are offered. Whether it is served to you personally or is on someone else's plate, if you don't like it, keep that to yourself. No one wants to hear your gross noises if they are eating meat and you are a vegetarian, and vegetarians don't want you to pontificate about how you detest Boca burgers. If you don't like it and you aren't eating it, leave the person who is eating it alone. They don't need your commentary. Fourth, and very important, when you are out at a restaurant, remember to treat staff like the human beings they are. They are not there for you to verbally beat up. They are there doing a physically, emotionally, and mentally demanding job in order to make a living, and the greatest majority of them are trying to do a good job for you. And while you're at it, here's a thought. Learn the difference between good service and bad service. Tip accordingly, and never ever stiff a server unless they are truly bad at their job. It just isn't right. And lastly, remember this, manners are not just for guests and their host. They should also apply to everyday home meals. It's just as important to treat your family and friends with courtesy and manners as it is to treat strangers and guests, because manners make life that much more pleasant. Families have enough edge on them from living in close quarters day in and day out, and it can never be bad to just treat each other with kindness and respect. Good manners start at home, and manners matter. To end this thing about manners, thing number three for today, I shall demonstrate use of said manners. Thank you very much for listening. It was delicious. May I be excused? And that's about all I have. I got nothing else. That manners thing is really bugging the heck out of me, can you tell? Is it helping anyone out there to improve their world? Is it all for naught? You should let me know. You can use all those fancy gadgets on the homepage of the show, 3things.podomatic.com, to send me your musings on the matter. I hope that I entertained, enlightened, educated, or encouraged someone, somewhere, in some way, with my things today. Perhaps you feel able to help a friend out with their manners, or you got a giggle out of the spankings, or maybe you just feel like looking up at the sky. Perhaps your eyes cannot see what the Hubble can, but they can still quite plainly discern the beauty in a star. May you always look up, and may you always also remember this thing. It's very easy to do, and so very important as well. Remember to take a moment to forgive yourself and be happy. Good day.
Mission has been completed.
Be bugging out and going home.
No point in hanging around this dump any longer.
I'm gonna miss you. You had such potential. But then again, all good things must come to an end.
Well, I guess it's time for your old birdie buddy, Big Bird, to say hasta la vista.
Goodbye, good luck, and good riddance.
You can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave.
Gentlemen, it's been a privilege flying with you.
And like that, he's gone.
Now give me a kiss and say goodnight.
Scat, skedaddle, adios, arrivederci, ciao, aloha, bug off.
If you'll not be needing me, I'll close down for a while.
They're coming to take me away, ha-ha, they're coming to take me away, ho-ho.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Ooh, yes.
TTFN, ta-ta for now.